For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Thank you, everyone. Good morning. Thanks for coming here. So nice to meet you. I'm second year Master of Divinity students at the University of Chicago. Yeah, as Anshin has just introduced, and I'm from China, so I'm very new to this country. So I'm just very excited to share my experience. And today, today I would like to talk about compassion. Because this is some topic that has been in my mind for a while, and I want to explore what the relation of compassion to our daily practice. So recently, I asked a meditation teacher how to generate meditation in daily life, and he said that I can do metta meditation. So metta meditation is loving kindness meditation, and it's very important to send loving kindness to myself first. And he said, when you send so much loving kindness to yourself that it spills over, then it will be easier and natural to generate loving kindness to others. The order of metta meditation is to send loving kindness to oneself, then to someone you know, and then to all beings in the world. It's not the first time that I hear people talk about metta meditation, and it's also not the first time that I hear people say, oh, you need to have compassion to yourself. And I also have been practicing metta meditation for a while, on and off, and I found it's really powerful. So if I can genuine and really have this practice this in my mind frequently, so I can first have loving kindness to myself, then everybody I meet in my life, I can say, oh, may I be happy, may I be free of pain, and may you be happy, may you be free of pain. So may all beings be free of pain, be free of suffering. So this is this practice, I found it very helpful to generate the loving kindness to everybody in we encounter in our life. But sometimes, when I'm too busy in my life, and I found that I forget about the significance of compassion to myself. Sometimes I found that when I'm too judgmental to other people, I'm judgmental to myself as well. I realize that sometimes when I think some people is not doing a good job, or when I think somebody's not doing the right thing, or when I'm thinking someone is not smart enough, actually sometimes I found that I'm making my own life miserable. I actually is having a hard time with myself. Sometimes actually I'm thinking I'm not smart enough, or I'm not doing the right thing, or I care too much about myself. Or when I get caught up by my preconception on other people, compassion starts to fall apart. So how does our Zazen practice relate to compassion? So I start to read the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shin Suzuki. I've read this book a few times. When I just arrived, came to the U.S. 1.5 years ago, I started to read it. I felt every time I read, I felt every time it's like it's new, because every time I have new learning from this book. And sometimes I felt I've never read this before. So I felt it's important to go back to the great books. So here I would like to share a passage I read. Suzuki Roshi says, in the beginner's mind, there's no thought. I have attained something. All self-centered thoughts limit our vast mind. When we have no thought of achievement, no thought of self, we are true beginners. Then we can really learn something. The beginner's mind is the mind of compassion. When our mind is compassionate, it's boundless. Dogen Zenji, the founder of our school, always emphasized how important it is to resume our boundless original mind. Then we are always true to ourselves, in sympathy with all beings, and can actually practice. This quote reminds me that the Zazen practice is to realize our beginner's mind. When we sit, we are mindful of our breathing as a way to help us to be grounded in the present moment. We do not need to think or do something. Thoughts come and go. We are aware of those thoughts. But we know that it's just the way they are. When we do not try to attain anything, we do not think of ourselves. We see us as beginners. Boundless compassion naturally unfolds itself. I have a very hot temper in the past, and I used to get angry and get stuck in my anger for days in the past. I can still feel the habitual pattern in my mind, and I see that it's just so easy to get angry toward other people. And sometimes it's so easy to get angry toward myself. Meditation practice is very helpful to alleviate these negative emotions because it makes me be mindful of what's going on in my mind. Sometimes when I get angry and when I'm aware of my anger, I start to laugh at my anger. When I can actually do that, I gradually forget my anger. Also, when I see other people get angry, I learn to understand their anger, as I have been angry like this as well. And sometimes I wonder who is not angry. When I get angry, I think about Thich Nhat Hanh's Gassa. He says, breathing in, I see my anger. Breathing out, I smile toward my anger. This is not an act of suppression or of fighting. It's an act of recognizing. Once we recognize our anger, we embrace it with a lot of awareness, a lot of tenderness. Compassion comes from seeing suffering as part of our life and to see things as they are. Thich Nhat Hanh says, when another person makes you suffer, it's because he suffers deeply within himself, and his suffering is spilling over. He does not need punishment, he needs help. That's the message he's sending. I like this quote very much because I felt this full of love and kindness. When someone say or do something not very nice, or when someone do things not as we expected, instead of being angry or disappointed to other people, can we really see the suffering in other people and see that maybe he or she just had a bad day? Can we return with a smile and wish other people a great day? Or can we see how we can help them? Recently, I read a book called Genogram Journey. It's a book about family system and the genogram of their family. It uses many examples of famous people's genogram to analyze their life. Those people are, many of them, they are famous writers, politicians, or artists, or scientists. What struck me most is that there's so much suffering in all those families. There's not a single family whose family is so smooth. And even those very smart and successful people, I can see so much trauma that every single family has been through. There's loss of family members, secrets, disputes among family members that they don't want to share at all, and a cut of relationships, disputes that have not been repaired for decades, And I wonder whose life is not suffering. Sickness, old age, and death are things that happen to all of us. In the Buddhist teachings, the three poisons of ignorance, attachment, and aversion are the primary causes that keep sentient beings trapped in samsara. Zazen helps me to be aware of these emotions and sit with these emotions and learn to laugh at them, because that's the way they are. That's the way the life it is. And I see very many people working very hard, especially in the U.S. I felt, wow, those people are working way, way much harder than I ever met in my life. Then I see many people work so hard to achieve what they want. And behind every achievement, there's sacrifice and a compromise. And sometimes I see that even if you work very hard, it doesn't guarantee that you can achieve everything you want. And life is not easy for everyone. Everybody is dealing with their suffering in their own way. Suffering itself is how we live and how we extend our life. And sometimes I wonder, why do I need to be so busy? What's the meaning of being so busy in life that I got caught up in a chaotic mind and I forget the beginner's mind? Who is the one that is not busy? That is the dilemma that many people are facing in our daily life. And I'm glad that I have the opportunity to learn and practice Zazen. And each time I sit, it allows me the space and time to be aware of all the emotions and all the things that are happening in my life. Suzuki Roshi says, we say concentration, but to concentrate your mind on something is not the true purpose of Zazen. The true purpose is to see things as they are, to observe things as they are, and to let everything go as it goes. Once you understand your inner power to purify ourselves and our surroundings, you can act properly, and you will learn from those around you, and you will become friendly with others. This is the merit of Zazen. So I found this Zazen practice is very closely related to the practice of generating compassion. So when we are aware of our beginner's mind, we can see and understand other people the way they are, with compassionate mind. And also I learned to understand that spiritual path is very individual. There's no right or wrong way of practice. I've experienced different forms of practice before I came here. I've met many Buddhist practitioners in China, and many of them, some of them practice Pure Land Buddhism. They chant Buddha's name many times a day. They do many good things as a way of accumulating merits. And they have confidence that they will go to the Pure Land. And also I have practiced with the Tibetan Buddhists who do tons of prostrations and chanting every day. And I can see they are also very easygoing and a very peaceful and compassionate mind. And in Myanmar, the Theravada tradition, many monks and nuns, they do meditation all day long in monasteries every day. And many lay people's job actually is to give offering to the monastery to accumulate merit for their life. And sometimes I felt it's very touching that when I was in Myanmar, I visit people, Burmese family, they have their houses, it's very empty, they don't have much belongings, but they still remember to give offerings to the Sangha. So I guess that everybody has their own way of practice. And I also like the teaching of Chinese Buddhism, the idea of Yi Nian San Qian, which means every moment of experience as the 3,000 aspects of existence. The Chinese Buddhist master Zhiyi says that trusting that all phenomena without exception are aspects of Buddhahood. The Lotus Sutra teaches that all beings without exception have the potential to become Buddha. And many ways of practice are skillful means to be the Bodhisattva path. So if we can really see that everybody we encounter in our life is a Buddha, and no matter sometimes how much maybe I don't like, or maybe I feel distant from other people's way of doing things, these are just my thoughts. And each person is wonderfully awakening their own way. When my mind is diluted, I don't see it. And Suzuki Roshi says, sometimes we think it's impossible for us to understand something unfamiliar. But actually, there's nothing that is unfamiliar to us. If a Japanese Buddhist comes to the US, he's no longer a Japanese. I'm living in your cultural background. I'm eating nearly the same food as you eat. And I'm communicating with you in your language. Even though you do not understand me completely, I want to understand you. There's always a possibility of understanding, as long as we exist in the utter darkness of the sky, as long as we live in emptiness. I've always said that you must be very patient if you want to understand Buddhism. But I have been seeking for a better word than patience. Perhaps constancy is a better word. You must force yourself to be patient. But in constancy, there's no particular effort involved. There's only the unchanging ability to accept things as they are. So I hope everybody through the Zazen practice can realize your own beginner's mind, which is already boundless and compassionate. And I hope through our constant practice, everybody can live a loving life. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nicole. That was a really wonderful talk. Now is a time when you can ask Nicole some questions about the talk or maybe generate a little bit of discussion about compassion. Or questions that you might have about other things.
Self-compassion, the compassion you have on yourself. That actually reminds me of some recent scientific research that I read about that topic. Sorry, it's a little bit straightforward. It's about science. But I think the underlying principles are like quite surprising. So there's like one psychology research about how people react to the failure of their willpower. So for example, let's say if you have a challenge of your day, say today you want to be on your diet, so you should eat clean, you should not eat junk food. And what happened is, if you just fail your challenge, and say like you just eat a lot of sugars, eat a lot of candies, and people do research about like how what's the impact of different reactions. So they group people into a different categories, and they found that if you have a compassion to yourself, let's say, like you forgive yourself, so that's say, hey, today is just maybe just a fun mistake day, I will start it tomorrow. That's the first category. The second category is people have no compassion to yourself. It's like I said, hey, what you can do about that, then this is so bad, and you just keep blaming yourself. And it's surprising that people who have compassion to yourself actually is more likely to overcome the failure in the future, and in the long term they can perform better than the other group. So I think that's some kind of like very relevant to this self-compassion. So because if you think about conventional wisdom, if you blame yourself or if you feel bad about yourself, that means you're trying to, like you are restricted yourself, right? You want to achieve something good, which people conventionally think is good, but actually it's a different. If you just be kind to yourself, and if you can tolerate your failure, and you are actually less likely to fail again. So I think, so when I read that, like this was some sort of chapter in some book, and when I read that paragraph, it connects me to the Buddhism practice immediately, because the idea of self-compassion is very relevant to, and it's amazing that like it's somehow like in scientific research is also connects to the Buddhism tradition. So I think that's it's kind of an interesting observation.
Self-compassion, when you think about it, it's like there's also this issue of becoming aware. You know, like when we sit with ourselves and we are able to be open and understanding of our own pain rather than critical or shutting it down, feeling I shouldn't feel that way, I don't deserve to feel that way, or whatever. You know, to learn to be accepting of our own pain. Look at it, understand it, try to understand where it came from. You know, it allows us to be able to be open to other people's pain and more accepting rather than judgmental, I think. But you know that there's a process here that goes on. And so, you know, I think, processes going on when we look at our own pain and we sit with it. And gradually become more accepting and understanding of it, that we're shifting ourselves in terms of being able to be understanding around maybe other people's harsh behavior that we realize is coming from negative self.
Dimension of compassion that involves, you know, accepting that things aren't going to be perfect. But when we're having self-compassion, we try to accept that we're not going to be perfect, we're not going to do things perfectly. And I could see how that would lead people actually to be more effective in the world, because when, you know, if we try so hard to get everything perfectly, we won't get anywhere. It's hard to work with others because we're also not compassionate toward them, and they don't want to work with us anymore. And so compassion is really, you know, such an integral part of being able to work together with others.
Firstly, thank you for your talk. I quite enjoyed it. First, speaking about metta and compassion in general, with what you said, and also what you said about the scientific discoveries about self love, reminded me of, I think it was also who was mentioning about green onions, I think it was, when you cut them to use in food, they would grow back larger than they were before. Compared it to metta, in that when you love and they're actively practicing love inside and externally, but it just actually creates more love. It's like the only inexhaustible resource. It just sort of expands on itself and grows whenever it's used, contrary to what we normally think about things, and that when you've used them, they've gone away from you, that they're depleted. But in fact, with compassion, builds on itself and grows even more as you understand and look into compassion builds around you. With beginner's mind, which is such a wonderful phrase, I've been working a lot with that recently about just sort of continually coming back. I noticed something in myself that I am almost always lost in these sort of loops of thought, sort of like rumination, just endless churning of thought, and I had relied on it as sort of a crutch, or just sort of relied on it in general in the past, sort of, I guess, habitually, very habitually, hindrance actually to observing what's around me, because it sort of builds on this anxiety of tense and tension, which is sort of racing and running internally over these just random thoughts and things. And I've been working lately to try to come back and be aware of the thought and being able to just let go of it and have this sort of fresh beginner's mind again, just that I don't need to run down these paths, which has been very nice to allow me to see how it reminds me of a picture that I saw on a post about anxiety, in which there's a picture of a person's face from the side, and it had like anxiety. It's got like the view, like the cone of view going in, like into the head, into the brain, and the non-anxiety is like out and expansive. And I felt similarly about when sort of come home to the present. It can like really notice this sort of pivoting from like this racing internal enclosed sort of claustrophobic feeling to this very expansive sort of outwardness. You mentioned also this is the last thing, but you mentioned also who I forget exactly which one you used, but the idea of asking who is it that is who is it that is busy. It's a thing I've been working a lot with that I find very beautiful, just simply asking who is it that is doing this or that, who is it that is thinking, who is it that is sitting, who is it who is angry. She's done a lot to just sort of like remind me of my own country. It's really a distinctive immediate or other sort of trying to break that.
Topic more because of developing for health and stuff. as an assurance.
Sounds a little bit idealized, we can feel like we have to do something to get ourselves out of the equation or to move beyond ourselves. And that sets us up for that feeling of, you know, whether it's resentment over, you know, how come how I feel right now isn't good enough, you know, or feeling like we have to be perfectly compassionate. And maybe it helps to always remember that we are finite, limited beings. You know, we're talking about compassion as an absolute, but we also live in the, you know, phenomenal and relative world, and we are finite, limited beings with only so much that we can do for ourselves or for others without losing ourselves. And so I think we have to, you know, it's okay to push our envelope a little bit and see if we can find a little bit more compassion, but when we go beyond our limits, whether it's with ourselves or whether it's with other people, we can actually set up a state where the very opposite feeling arises and we just feel, you know, resentful and angry and, you know, because we've gotten an idea of what compassion should be. And so you know, maybe that's something that we can look at when we do start to feel angry and resentful and like we're not doing compassion right, is how can I dial that back? I am still respecting myself. myself and my experience. You know, sometimes we're in experiences that make us, that contribute to feeling resentful, and we don't want to just blow past that and throw you know, the idea of compassion on that. So so when we're with others and we maybe have an idea that we would like to extend compassion to them, we have to remember that we are still here, and we have needs of our own in that interaction or that relationship. So compassion isn't something that we can impose on a situation. It's something that is arising out of our actions along with all other beings, and it's a maybe a dynamic balance to find within ourselves, and not an idealized state that we have to somehow attain or not attain.
Allow someone to solve their own problem
because that's they're going to do a better job of it than you ever could. And so if you just solve problems for people, it's enabling them to have the problem again in a certain way. So sometimes it feels more compassionate to support someone in solving their own problem instead of doing the work for them, which is ultimately not as helpful, not as compassionate. So I don't know if that's maybe helpful at this.
Things that some of you may know that I'm actually studying to be a chaplain. And one of the things that you talked about was, you know, when I first started, you know, I got to fix these people. And my teachers keep saying, no, it's not about fixing them. It's just about being there. And I think Joan Halifax, who's a
thought-provoking talk, and thanks everyone.